Hello again, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Flashback Fridays on Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele, and I'd like to welcome my co-host back, Ian Cargard. This is the 16th episode in a long line of them that will span over the course of several months as we analyze, critique, and dissect each and every Marvel film in chronological order. Last week, we did Spider-Man Homecoming, and this week, we're going to be doing one of Ian's favorites, talking about Thor Ragnarok. Just a friendly reminder, if you like what you're hearing, you can follow us wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Just search Real Talks. That's R-E-E-L Talks. Just like my name, S-T-E-E-L-E. Also, you can follow us on social media. I'm on Twitter at WannabeRounder and on Instagram at DCaduto. Where can they find you, Ian?
I'm on Instagram for frogs_z, so FROOGZ_Z.
Just a couple of quick announcements. Our revamped Patreon channel is now live. You can find it by typing Real Talks into the search bar. Let me tell you a little about it. We're offering four different affordable levels you can support us at. $3, $7, $15, and our highest is only $20 a month. If you do choose to support us, you'll have the opportunity to get some great perks, such as your name shouted out before your podcast, cool merch, and if you're one of our major contributors, you'll get a one-hour monthly Zoom meeting with Alyssa and myself, not to mention one unpublished podcast. For more details, just go to the website. I'll leave the link in the description. So without any further ado, let's dive into the movie. So, Thor Ragnarok. So we just had Love and Thunder come out a few weeks ago, but before that, there was a little movie that Taika Waititi did entitled Thor Ragnarok, which actually was pretty good. I mean, for all intents and purposes. So, as we do every week. So this was made by Marvel Studios, distributed by Walt Disney. So the merger had happened for a couple years by now. This actually was released the first week of November of 2017. And so it was actually, well, go ahead. What were you going to say?
It kind of surprises me. Like, isn't it usually, if it's going to be in November, it's, you know, like, near Thanksgiving, I would think.
Yeah. I mean, this was more of a, I won't say darker movie, but it was lighthearted, for sure, but it wasn't that blockbuster movie. You know, it wasn't like a Avengers or a Civil War or something. So I could see why. And, as you were saying, the kids are, you know, the kids are basically out almost by this point.
Yeah.
So it was released the first week of November 2017. Believe it or not, it actually stayed in theaters for over a year. 424 days, 60 weeks. Which, I know, it's crazy to think now. You barely get a movie that's in there 6 weeks. So it opened, it had a pretty good opening. It had a $122 million opening based on about a $175 million budget. So that was impressive in itself, $180 million. And so then it made $122 its opening weekend and made $315 million domestic. And so it made about 25 or 30%, almost a third of its money in its opening weekend. And at that time, too, you got to understand, there really wasn't much out. So, like, Lady Bird was the only thing that was really, like, out that was of any notice. I mean, there were other films out there, but nothing like that. So it made over $535 million internationally. And it, for the final total, it made about $854 million. And this is only a couple years ago, and this was still in China and, you know, all those overseas countries. So that was still fantastic for it. So, as I made mention, it was directed by Taika Waititi, and it was written by Eric Pierce, who actually did Black Widow a couple years later, and Kong vs. Godzilla. Craig Kyle, who actually co-wrote that with him, and Christopher L. Yost, who did The Dark World, which, if you want to go back and listen to that podcast, that Flashback Friday episode, that really, it's kind of an under, I've known people that like it, it's kind of an underrated film, but not usually kind of like a lower third type of film. So how many times have you seen Ragnarok? You said this was one of your favorites, yeah?
Yeah, I've I've seen it, gosh, I think at least 4 or 5 times.
So, what did you think of it the first time you saw it?
I wasn't expecting, like, I thought it was just going to be like, you know, the other Thor movies where it's just kind of meh. This really made me fall in love with the character, I'd say. It's just kind of the buddy-buddy components of it and, like, just kind of the lightheartedness of it all. I wasn't really expecting what I got out of it. So when I first saw it, it was, you know, I never thought Marvel would make something like this. So it was a real surprise. How about you?
Yeah. I mean, it was, I was definitely laughing out loud when I saw it. And I mean, there's still today that, you know, the couple of things that really stand out to me is the password, the mightiest Avenger. It's one of those things that he can't, yeah, so we'll get into that. But it's, yeah, it's pretty humorous. It was good to see the Hulk in a different, we had always seen, like, I don't want to say stupid Hulk, but we had always seen, but yeah, it was a different Hulk than we usually see. And he didn't need his own standalone movie. So he got quite a bit of Mark Ruffalo, and you quite got quite a bit of Hulk. So, and it was almost like an Avengers type of feel to it, because you had the whole team. We'll get into it, but yeah, it was good. I loved it. So the synopsis is, imprisoned on the other side of the universe, the mighty Thor, played by Chris Hemsworth, finds himself in a deadly gladiatorial contest that puts him up against the Incredible Hulk, Mark Ruffalo, his former ally and former Avenger. Thor's quest for survival leads him to a race against time to prevent the almighty powerful Hela, who I thought, played by Cate Blanchett, who I really thought was underrated. You could really tell. But yeah, she was really good in it. From destroying the home world and the Asgardian civilization. So yeah, it was fun. And had you seen anything with Taika Waititi directing before?
No, I've never heard of him before this. Actually, you know what? Did he do that vampire comedy show? I mean, I didn't know.
Oh, I think he did. Yes. What we find in the shadows, or
something like in the shadows. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had seen that show, but I didn't know that he did the show. I mean, I didn't know he was a director. I liked the show, but I didn't know he was a director.
Yeah. That's actually a pretty funny show. So. Yeah, the key about Marvel is they always seem to find these, I don't want to call them no names, but these individuals that have directed little projects before, or small screen stuff, and you go, who is this? And then you see a project from them, you're like, wow, they got some chops. And so, I mean, you know, I mean, part of it's the writing too, but it was just like, so we'll get into a couple of the cameos there in a minute. So the story opens about 2 years after Age of Ultron. So this is, so it's after Age of Ultron, and Thor, once again played by Chris Hemsworth, having failed to locate the Infinity Stones, has also been dumped by Jane, insisting it was a, quote, mutual dumping. So it's always mutual, right, when you get dumped by somebody. So he's hanging in chains above a fire pit after being before the monster Zertan, and he believes his destiny is to bring about Ragnarok, the complete destruction of Asgard. So Thor learns this from Odin, or from Zertan, that Odin is not on Asgard. So he uses his hammer to escape and destroys him. And by the way, that's a pretty cool sequence in itself. Like, how he tries calling the hammer over once, and he doesn't get there. He's like, oh, you gotta wait for it. And then on, like, the third time, he just knocks him upside the chin. He's like, okay, I gotcha. So he escapes, and so keeping his crown, which is the source of his power, he returns to Asgard and sends his skull down to the vaults. And then he finds Heimdall, which everybody likes, played by Idris Elba. And it's amazing, when you look at Idris Elba today, I mean, as a matter of fact, he has a new film coming out this upcoming weekend called Beast, which is, he's a father of 2 daughters, and they go on safari, and he has to basically fight off this lion. So that's going to be an interesting thing. But Idris Elba is, you know,
What else has he been in that I've seen him before this.
Have you ever seen Molly's Game?
No.
With Jennifer, yeah, I mean, Molly's Game's not a really popular movie. I love it. But, yeah, he was the attorney in that, and he's done a couple of other things. See, but he's a good actor. That's the thing. So, but yeah, it was nice to see him get this role reprised. So he's the holder of the Bifrost. And so he explains to Odin that Heimdall is accused of treachery. So he fled and they don't know where he's at. So reaching Asgard, Thor sees a mighty statue of Loki. Of course, we wouldn't even call him the Prince of Darkness. What is he called?
Mischief maker.
Mischief, thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Mischief. He's just a mischief maker. So that's his half-brother, as well as Odin lounging around enjoying a play of his, quote, heroic sacrifice while fighting the Dark Elves. Of course, realizing what happened, Thor forces Loki, basically, who disguised himself as Odin at the end of the Dark World. For anybody who's seen that, spoiler alert. So when he's having that heartfelt conversation, who he thinks is his father, and he walks away, and, you know, of course, it ends up being Loki. So he demands to know where Odin is, and it's revealed that Loki has placed Odin under a spell and dumped him in a retirement home in New York City.
That's not like, different than what people do nowadays. Yeah, no, in no real joke, life. Huh?
Yeah, okay, sorry, Dad. We gotta put away the key, you know, see ya. But, you know, so then they get there by the time it's demolished to make their next move. So Loki's pulled through a dimensional hole in the sidewalk with a card. And the interesting, because, you know, Marvel loves their Easter eggs, the card reads 177A Bleecker Street. And, of course, that's where Doctor Strange is. That's the Sanctum. So he pulls the... So there goes Thor and Doctor Strange. And so he agrees to help find Odin. And so they all leave Earth. And after doing some research, in which Thor continually is teleported around Strange's Sanctum, Doctor Strange deduces that Odin's in Norway. So then they eventually get there when Odin tries to attack so the Doctor unceremoniously sends them into another portal. So they both find Odin in Norway sitting in a nice scenic cliff. And by the way, it is a beautiful, when you see that establishing shot, it is a beautiful shot. Like, it's just him sitting down and it's just water. It's like looking out at the ocean. It's nice. And he admits that he's dying. And Ragnarok is fast approaching. So Thor insists when he destroyed Surtan that he prevented Ragnarok. But Odin mentions Hela, his sister, his firstborn. So the goddess of death and the one that will seize Asgard from Odin's son. And it's interesting now that they're, you know, we go through this as a third movie and you've never heard of her. In any, like, it's that unnamed sibling, if you will. Oh, yeah. You have a sister. Surprise. So.
It really didn't seem as planned out as some other stuff in the Marvel Universe are. You know, it just seems to kind of come out of thin air.
Yeah. But it worked. So it worked to that extent. So Odin tells Thor that they previously was consumed by darkness and sealed away. And the only force that continues her exile is Odin himself. So he's the only one that's actually stopping her from destroying everything. So he apologizes to Thor for failing him before dying and disappearing. Kind of like, you'd almost compare it to, like, his death is almost like Yoda in Return of the Jedi. Anybody who's seen Return of the Jedi, so when Luke goes back to Dagobah and he wants to fulfill his training, and of course Yoda is 800 years old. And that's a scene in The Hutt. He says, you know, when 800 years old you become, look good, this good. And he's like, and so he asks about his actual heritage. And so, but when Yoda dies, he just disappears. So I thought that kind of reminded me of Yoda in that respect. So Helena emerges from her prison and engages the two in small talk. Seeing that they won't be reasoned with, Thor throws his hammer toward her. However, the goddess easily and effortlessly shatters the long, destructible weapon. And that's the scene where, I think it was in the trailer, that he does throw the hammer and she just crushes it with one foul swoop to show that she's really that powerful, even more powerful than Thor. So that was interesting. Loki, seeing that they don't stand a chance, asks to be returned to Asgard via the Bifrost. However, Helena also enters the portal, expelling Loki and then Thor from different points. So basically, they both land on Asgard, but one is on one side of the country, or the planet, so to speak, and the other is on the other side, or near the capital. So then they have to get back to each other. Arriving at the Bifrost Bridge, she quickly kills Valstad, Ray Stevenson. And actually, so this is, was he one of the three? Remember when we did Thor, and he said, oh, these guys aren't needed?
Yeah, they were a little bit extra, right?
Yeah, he was one of the guys that was one of the extras. So he finally met his doom. Actually, believe it or not, Ray Stevenson, this goes all the way back to a different movie. Do you know he played Darth Maul in The Phantom Menace?
Really?
Yes.
Oh, small world.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, yeah, so.
He's one of my favorite actors. I mean, that's one of my favorite characters in the Star Wars universe, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so that's why he was able to, like, he was so acrobatic with the lightsaber and everything else, because he does know, I don't know which one he knows off the top of my head, but he does know martial arts. And he is very fluid with sword work and everything else. And actually, believe it or not, Fendel was done by Zachary Levi. And of course, he's in another superhero movie by DC. He played Shazam.
So
it's, talk about a small world playing superheroes. I guess he liked it so much that he wanted his own movie. So after recruiting, so you had a terrified Scrooge to her cause. She then heads to Asgard, where she kills the entire palace guard single-handedly. So Thor is deposited by the portal on a planet, which is nearby, which seems to consist of giant garbage mounds fed by giant portals in the sky. He's attacked by several scavengers, not now weaponless. He's quickly overpowered before his attackers are scared away by the hard-drinking bounty hunter, Valkyrie. So this is when we get Valkyrie for the first time, and yeah, I love Tessa Thompson. I think she was great in this, but she was just great. I loved her in Creed. I don't know. Did you happen to see Creed?
No.
Creed.
Is it a superhero movie? Or
no,
is it
No. Creed is about, okay, so you're aware of Rocky, right?
Yes.
Okay. So Apollo Creed fights Rocky in the first one. And so he dies in Rocky IV. But Creed, played by Michael B. Jordan, is actually his son. So in the movie Creed, they get Rocky to train Adonis. That's his son's name. He gets to train Adonis. And Tessa Thompson is the love interest. So, yeah. But she's great. So, yeah, as a matter of fact, he's coming out with another one soon. But yeah, and she's been in other things too. But Creed is something that she's, like, really well known in. However, she then captures Thor, placing a small shocking device on his neck to pacify him, and takes him to the Grand Master. And this is, I would say, the one cameo we have in Jeff Goldblum. Now, you're a big, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're a big Jeff Goldblum person.
Yes.
Yes. So, yeah, when you saw him for the first time, did you get excited?
I was. I was like, what is he doing here? And it was also one of the reasons that I've watched this movie over and over again. I still like seeing him. I mean, just his personality is great. It's just such a good role for him, I think.
Yeah, it's actually one of the, funnier is maybe not the word, cooler. His whole, you know, look with, like, the fur, and then he's got that beard, and, you know, it's not even a beard, it's like a goatee type of thing. Yeah, it really works. Who's delighted with the new acquisition and decides to put him up against the champion fighter. Thor learns that Loki is now also present and has been there for weeks, time moving far quicker than on the Grandmaster's planet. So during which he's found favor, so he's actually in their favor with the Grand Master. Not wishing to jeopardize his position, Loki pretends not to care about his brother, and Thor is thrown into the dungeons where he befriends rock creature Korg, who will have another role to play in some of the other films, who explains that everybody who's gone up against the champion has been killed. I liked how, by the way, as you know this, as I'm sure a lot of our listeners do, Korg's voice was done by none other than Taika Waititi. So he's not only, you know, directing people, but he's also doing the voice of this rock creature. And it's like, of course, you know, he's the comic relief of it.
And that's also probably why we've been seeing the rock creatures so much in other reiterations of Marvel movies, because he's easy to cast, right?
Yeah. And it's not that, I mean, it's just one of the, and he's comic relief. Especially, and we'll get to it when we get to Avengers Infinity War, but it was a great job of the comic relief in the scene where they go to visit Thor for the first time since what happened. And Thor is more of a drunken guy at this point, and he's hit his low because of what happened. And then you had Korg, who, you know, you had a really sad scene with Rocket and everybody else and Thor, and then they go to visit him, and it's like, well, Korg's that you know, and he's playing the video game. Yeah, we'll get to that in a bit, but yeah, that's pretty good. And so they're trying to build up the drama here of, oh, everybody that's gone up against the champion has been killed. Well, how fierce could he be, really? Meanwhile, Helena enters Asgard's throne room and pulls down the fresco above the throne depicting Odin and the royal family and their benevolent rule of the kingdom and universe, revealing the darker history of Asgard, where Odin and Helena conquered the Nine Realms before she was banished by her father. Helena then heads down to the vaults and uses the Eternal Flame to restore her entire army and revive her monstrous wolf, Fenris. She also dismisses the Infinity Gauntlet that is kept there, but that's a fake. So we don't really ever see the gauntlet. Now, one of the stones was actually on Asgard, and that was the Tesseract. I always get confused. But yeah, so she then attempts to open a portal and conquer all of the realms, but the Bifrost sword was taken by Hemsdell, who's been hiding in the hills and is now sheltering the escaping civilians from Asgard. So he's actually trying to get people out of the city, so to speak, and into different shelters, because, you know, everything's going sideways for them. So Thor is taken to the arena and put up against the champion, who is revealed to be none other than the Incredible Hulk. So,
Do you remember from the previews, he's like, we used to work together!
I do remember that. And it's pretty funny, because it's one of those things where you go, okay, who is it? And then, you know, the look on his face, yeah! Thor is overjoyed to see his old teammate. However, the Hulk attacks him. The two bash around the arena. Thor is actually gaining the upper hand. He tries to use his Natasha Romanoff's calming techniques to transform him back to Bruce Banner, played by Mark Ruffalo.
What is it, the sun is setting or something? I can't remember.
Yeah. However, it doesn't work, and Thulk thrashes him. And Loki's very unsettled to see the creature that gave him the sound beating during his attempted conquest of Earth. Of course, anybody who's seen the Avengers, and you go back and watch the Avengers, and go back and listen to our Flashback Friday episode of the Avengers, where Loki is basically saying, so he basically picks Loki up and slams him in the ground. You puny god! And he slams him, and he's like, it's because it's out of nowhere, that's why. So eventually Thor stops holding back and begins to fight it, at one point having a vision of Odin causing him to channel raw lightning. However, just when he's about to win, The Grandmaster, not wanting to see a crowd and his own favorite be beaten, shocks Thor into submission. As the Hulk leaps into the air to crush Thor, Thor pushes his hand back in defense before everything goes black. So, kind of like that scene at the end of Avengers Infinity War. It was actually in the trailer where Thanos was, you know, trying to punch Captain America and he was holding him back. That sort of thing. So, on Asgard, Helena has remaining people rounded up and demands to know where the whereabouts of the Bifrost Sword is. When no one comes forward, Helena tells Scourge to execute a random person. Scourge hesitates. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't Scourge played by Carl Urban?
Yeah, I think maybe.
I think he was. So, I mean, it's an it because he's on The Boys now, which I hear is a fantastic show. But, you know, the other movie that the franchise I think of him from is Star Trek. He played he played McCoy. So, yeah, it's actually Carl Urban who plays Scourge. So he hesitates, but still is about to do it. Before he can make the kill, someone comes in forward with his location. So, of course, they always want to push it to the absolute brink before you kill somebody. Wait, wait, wait. And then, of course, they you know, give up the thing because they don't. That's the one thing about Marvel, is they don't kill anybody.
Not permanently, anyway.
Not permanently, no. I mean, the only one I can think of off the top of my head permanently was Loki at the beginning of Infinity War.
Yeah.
Where Thanos snaps his neck. So, but otherwise they don't do it. So Thor wakes up later in the Hulk's chamber, being pampered by several beautiful women. Thor speaks to Hulk privately. Hulk is now able to speak far more intelligently than he was in his last appearance, and learns that he hasn't transformed back into Banner since leaving Earth 2 years earlier. The Hulk points out the window of the Quinjet that he left on Earth, which is still in one piece and could be used to escape. He also learns that Valkyrie is an Asgardian who is part of an elite all-female group that was sent up against Hela during a previous assault but were all killed. So Valkyrie being the only survivor. So I think this might be an interesting thing that they could. I wonder if they could, Marvel, I doubt they would ever do this, but ever have a feature film around the elite group of these Asgardians. I mean, we have Tessa Thompson, who's a survivor, but, you know, but it would be an interesting, you know, concept. I don't know. I just thought reading that, but,
well,
yeah.
I mean, to tell you the truth, there is so much volume of Marvel material now. And I wouldn't put it past them because they've got to have so much to, you know, put on Disney Plus nowadays.
Yeah, actually, that's probably where it would go.
Yeah.
They would probably end up putting that on Disney Plus. So Thor tries to convince her to help, but she initially refuses. Although the Hulk is happy in his life and wants to stay, he does help Thor acquire the control device for the electronic restraint. Thor pickpockets it from Valkyrie and removes the shocker from his neck. He then escapes from Hulk's apartment and reaches the Quinjet. This is that famous scene we were talking about. But is chased by the Hulk, which smashes it half apart. However, Thor then plays Black Widow's last message to him, prompting the Hulk to transform back into Bruce Banner. I never understood. I got it, but I never understood it. I mean, they tried to do something with it in Age of Ultron. I get it. And I think that is probably the one misstep. I mean, it was still a good movie, for all it was worth. But that is like the one misstep for me. Even in the beginning, there was a little flirtation going on and everything else. And then, I don't know. So, I get it because she's introduced to Banner in the Avengers. So there's that dichotomy there. I understand it. But I don't know. It's like, they tried to do something there, and it just didn't work for me.
Yeah. Well, they never do romance well. It just comes out of nowhere, and there's never any chemistry between them. It's just...
Yeah, I just didn't... I don't know. It's one of those things that's probably... And it wasn't even trying to be a romantic bond here. It was just, how they, you know. But, okay. So Thor explains to Banner the last memories of Sokovia during Ultron's offensive, what had happened. Banner, unable to believe Hulk was able to remain in control for 2 years, doesn't want to transform again, knowing that if he does, he may be the Hulk forever. Valkyrie meets up with Loki and the other two brief fight. And after Loki learns where she comes from and uses his power to make her remember her last encounter with Eleanor, which I thought was good because we got a little backstory there, and it was kind of like a little traumatic experience for Valkyrie too, because everybody she was killed. So there was a little PTSD, if you will, or a little, you know, compartmentalizing there that she had to, you know, repress memories.
And it's nice to actually see that. Like, they do talk about PTSD in a few of the movies. Like, they do, you know, with, you know, soldiers in other movies. They have, like, you know, Captain America counseling people on traumatic events. It's nice to see it in, like, females, too, who can, you know, have it for various reasons in combat or, you know. So it's a good point that they brought a woman into it and kind of brought it from another side.
Yeah, absolutely. Valkyrie has a change of heart, and she decides to help Thor return to Asgard and show her goodwill by beating and chaining up Loki. Like, okay, here's what I'm going to do to show you how I'm good. I'm just going to beat up this guy and chain him. And that's the scene in the where I think they walk into, and he's sitting in the chair, chained up, reuniting. Reuniting, Thor and Loki head down to steal a ship. However, Loki attempts to betray Thor to the Grand Master. Thor, expecting such a move by Loki, places a shocking device on Loki's back. So he's basically got his brother read so well by now.
He knows.
He's gonna be exactly. He knows. He knows. So he's just going to cover himself in that respect. So Thor tells his brother he had hoped that he'd at least show some capacity for growth and even begin to change for the better. But he understands Loki will always be a trickster. He then leaves the shocking device turned on with the remote just out of reach. It's one of those things where it's like, okay, you know, dip, you know. And so it's a little payback for Thor in that respect. Thor, Banner, and Valkyrie steal the Grandmaster's party orgy ship. And escaping the Grandmaster's clutches, leave it a passageway through, and this is not my words, but theirs, as known as the Devil's Anus. Now,
I'm surprised they use that term in a Disney movie.
Yeah, and you go, well, okay. Like, that's one of those things where you just go, we're going to put this in there, guys? We're really going to put this in there? I was thinking about that something the other day. It's like that scene in, I don't know, have you seen Venom?
Yes.
Okay, it's like that ending scene in Venom, where, you know, Tom Hardy changes into Venom. And he's like, if you ever come in here again, I'm going to rip off your head, your arms, your legs, and you're going to be rolling down the road like a fart in the wind.
Yeah.
Oh my God. How on earth? First of all, who's the screenwriter that wrote that? And second of all, who actually, you know...
Did another human being read this?
Yeah, exactly! And by the way, Tom Hardy actually reading that? I tell ya, it's just... It's those missteps. I don't care. It's just... It's a funny thing. I don't care one way or the other, but you go, wow. And you do it so good now, and you just ruin the whole thing. Anyways. So, reaching Asgard, just as Helena is about to destroy the remaining population who had attempt to escape through the Bifrost Bridge, Thor engages her in the vicious battle, but is still overpowered and loses an eye. So this is where we see Thor lose an eye, and all of the films later on, this is why he's wearing the eye patch, until Infinity War, which we'll get to much later on. So, but yeah, it was just interesting. Feeling he's useless without his hammer, Thor has a vision of Odin, who explains to his son that the hammer simply channels his powers, reminding him that he is the god of thunder. Odin also tells him that Asgard is not a place, but it's his people, and they can reestablish their society and culture anywhere. Now, realizing his full abilities, Thor unleashes a massive lightning bolt, repelling Hela. The one thing I'll say is this. The one theme, or a theme, that I've always seen in these movies is somebody saying, I'm nothing without blank. And you can go back to Iron Man 2 or Iron Man 3, and where he's like, I'm nothing without my suits. And then he realizes, you know what? I'm still a man. I can do all this stuff without having the Iron Man suits. And of course, he ends up destroying all the suits. I just did Spider-Man Homecoming last week, if you want to go back and actually listen to that episode. But in Spider-Man Homecoming, there's another scene where, you know, Tony gives Spider-Man the suit, and then he's trying to do some other stuff, and then he takes the suit back away from Peter, and Peter says to him, but I'm nothing without my suit. And this seems to be another thing where, you know, we're at the point in the script where it's called the point of no return. So this is where we're in the third act, and we think that the heroes aren't going to make it, or somebody's actually going to die. And once again, we were at a point where Thor thinks he's nothing without his hammer. But he's reminded that, hey, look, you're still a man. And it's not the hammer that makes you, it's the man that makes you. And I think that's always a good lesson to reiterate. A life lesson, for lack of a better word. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's a constant theme, and it was interesting to think that, like, he didn't really... I mean, he's been alive, like, the longest out of all of the Avengers. It seems interesting that it took him this long to realize what his actual capabilities were. So I guess he's kind of a slow learner.
Yeah, yeah. And so... But it is a good life lesson. And, you know, you are who you are because of who you are, not because of anything making you who you are. So... As Valkyrie and Helmdale attempt to hold off Helena's army, Loki reunites with Korg and other escaping fighters and procures a ship where he uses to evacuate the Asgardians. Banner also transforms back into the Hulk to fight off Fengus. Scourge, feeling guilt over having aligned himself with Helena, sacrifices himself to ensure the ship is able to escape. So we see somebody, you know, making a mistake and then redeeming themselves for it. And that's the important thing. You know, as long as they're able to see their wrongs, then that's great. And that's the important thing there. So Scourge actually, you know, ended up dying for the right cause. So Thor unites with Valkyrie and Loki, knowing Helena will soon be back, only she's growing stronger from Asgard's power. Thor suddenly realizes he can't stop Ragnarok, but must instead bring it to about who's about to defeat Helena, and sends Loki down to the vaults to throw Skuris' cell into the internal flame. So this is the skull that he took at the beginning of the movie, that he was wearing as a crown to say, hey, look, this is my conquest. So Loki goes down to actually get this. He does so and escapes, and it's heavily implied that he has a chance to steal the Tesseract, which, of course, we all know is an Infinity Stone. And so, once he gets back up, just as he's being resurrected and starts laying the kingdom to waste, Helena mounts an offense, but is of little use. Surtain is too powerful and destroys her with her sword. Thor escapes with Hulk, with Loki, Hulk, Heimdall, Valkyrie and Korg, and the surviving civilians and prisoners just before Asgard is completely decimated. Although Thor is upset about the destruction of his home, he knows it was necessary to prevent the extinction of his people. He then finally meets his destiny and takes the, quote, throne, the captain's chair on the bridge, where his first order is to return to Earth. So, that is Thor Ragnarok. So, there were a couple of credit scenes. So the mid-credit scene was Loki worries over Thor's decision to return to Earth, knowing that he won't be very welcome there since his last visit, and he tried to take over the planet, of course, from the Avengers, the Chitauri. Thor assures his brother he'll feel just fine and do everything, just as a menacing ship that dwarfs his own appearance through the window. And I'm sure you know this, but you know whose ship that is?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's implied, it's, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's implied, which we'll get to in a minute. So the post-credit scene is the Grandmaster, who's been chasing Thor, crashes on the garbage planet, where he's confronted by the scavengers, who are also a bunch of former slaves. He then congratulates them on the revolt and agrees to call it a tie. So he's like, yeah, please don't kill me. You guys win there. Yeah, so that's Thor Ragnarok. I liked it. I liked it because it had a lot of laughs to it. I liked it because it was had some adventure to it. I liked it because it had some drama to it. And it worked. So just getting back to that brief scene, so whose ship is it?
Well, it's Thanos.
Of course, it is. Yes, it is. It is Thanos' ship. So they are in serious trouble at this point. And I think everybody knows at this point he's in trouble. And so when we get to it, and we're going to record it now, but in a couple of weeks, we're going to get to Avengers Infinity War. And this is where this picks up. And so, yeah, it's the first 10 minutes of Infinity War are just, you know, it's something to behold. And, you know, going back to watch that movie again, it didn't seem like 2 hours and 20. It was 2 hours and 32 minutes the whole run. It didn't seem like a 2 hour and 20 minute movie at all.
No.
At all.
It was up there on the tops. I mean, it wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't a chore like some of the other movies.
Yeah. So that was Thor Ragnarok. It really, and it's still, it's only a, you know, we're only like 5 years out from that. And that's hard to believe. Like, this movie's like not even 5 years old. So, and it's still, I think a lot of people would say this is probably the best. Would you say, have you seen Love and Thunder?
I have not yet.
Okay. So, okay. So, of the three movies that you have seen, would you call this the best?
This is the best. This is, yeah. And it's because of the director, and I think they didn't do enough with Thor until they really brought this movie out and brought out his character.
I'm really curious to see what you think of when you see Love and Thunder. Because, I mean, and by the way, if you want to go back and listen to that spoiler cast, you can. But it just, it was good. As a matter of fact, it was so good, money-wise, that it just passed. It actually just ended up passing Ragnarok this last week. But it was a good movie. I liked it. There were some problems to it, but
yeah, I heard it wasn't as.
But it was still fun. It was fun. Yeah. You'll get a good kick out of it. So yeah. So that's all for this one. So let's talk about quickly what's coming up next week. We have Black Panther right around the corner, and then when that one's finished, we will have Infinity War, and then we've got Ant-Man and the Wasp, and then we have Endgame, and then we're going to be starting Phase 4. So we're almost there. So we're all leading up to Wakanda Forever, and this whole series is actually going to be ending the week before the sequel to Black Panther and Wakanda Forever. Let me just give you guys a quick update. Mob Mondays, they are coming, and they will be here by the end of August, I promise you. So that's going to be a $6.99 a month pay subscription. I just did an interview with Ryan Walsh today, so that will be up soon. And then we have, we've got a bunch of other stuff coming up on the podcast, so stay tuned. Okay, so that's it. So for Ann Cargard, I am David Steele, and you have been listening to Flashback Fridays.